could focus more on enjoying life, I think that'd be amazing. Yeah, hopefully that answers all the questions. I really enjoyed doing this, and I hope you have a good rest of the week. Bye.
I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Rebecca.
We're the hosts of Sociologic, broadcasting live at CJSF 90.1 FM from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday.
Tune in to hear meaningful conversations exploring all ideas through a sociological lens.
Stats can be hard to understand, but this one isn't. Nearly 1 in 4 people can't afford food in Canada. What does food insecurity look like where you live? Look up your address at foodsecuritynow.ca. That's foodsecuritynow.ca. Join Community Food Centers Canada in making a difference today.
And you have just listened to Food Security Now PSA and Sociologic. That happens every Tuesday at 7 p.m., my friends Kaylin and Rebecca. So everyone, you also listen to Rowan. Again, we're just finishing wrapping up a little bit of some environmental change makers of Canada selected by Starfish, stories and projects and what inspirates them and motivates them to continue doing the environmental work. Roman's story was really interesting. He dived a lot into food security, which is the reason for me to play the PSA, but something that I'm really interested to. If we look, most of the world CO2 that is emitted comes from the production of food and the waste of food. So there is a lot that everyone can help address. So if we're talking about policy change, or if we're talking about habits, policy, security, and policy, food security and food waste are two things that you can consider to, how can I help? How can I have the reuse of organic food? How can I contribute to our neighborhood recycling? Sorry, not recycling, food waste. And yeah, there are a lot of projects over there. And you can always also help to donate food if you work at a supermarket. And, well, way more initiatives. But going beyond talking about food waste, he also brought to us a lot of his inspiration. He brought to us a lot of his passion for the work. And I definitely appreciate the contributions, because when we're thinking about our daily basis and our connection to people, and as Rowan and him mentioning, bringing up energy of these people, it really matters for the work we do. So for our final piece today, I'm going to have Andy Hira. Andy Hira is a political science professor at SFU. He's going to talk a little bit of energy policy and how you can consider this while voting for the federal elections. And so this is Andy Hira. I'll have a little bit more of his introduction in the recorded piece that was done about 1.5 weeks ago. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hi everyone. This is another episode of Speak Up. I would like to welcome Dr. Hira, Dr. Andy Hira. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Andy Hira from the Department of Political Science, and I run the Clean Energy Research Group here at SFU.
And yes, so our interview basically today will focus a little bit on the current momentum for Canada when it comes to sustainable energy. We're going to be overlooking some policies over the last years, and also talking about how the tariffs and the war on tariffs is going to affect both Canada and the US when it comes to sustainable investments in clean energy. So I think that's maybe just a good question to set up the mood and for us to start. Is there anything funny that you do on a day-to-day basis that you would like to share? Like when you have time, because I know you're super busy.
anything funny? Well, I would say that all academic life is pretty absurd. That is, we often argue about very small things that seem like big things to the people that are involved in those discussions.
I see where you're coming from. I had a recent class, Introduction to Microeconomics, and the professor was really into those small debates, especially with professors from political sciences.
And yeah, he would usually jump into the economic discussions, and he has a particularly strong opinion about COVID. So I know where you're coming from. It's like these discussions usually they're so big when you're in it, and you find it funny, right?
It's funny because we tend to lack perspective. We're supposed to be public intellectuals, but somehow some of us are too far removed from reality to be very useful in that role.
I see. Well, let's begin with talking a little bit about policy. I think that's a way that research usually tries to engage a lot and then actually can lead to changes when at least researchers are heard. So I think that's just to introduce everyone that is hearing to this. Can you talk a little bit more about the currently situation when it comes to sustainable energy investments in Canada? So what do you know about the government's priorities, and what is your opinion on how those have been over the last years?
Well, we're in a big black box right now because we're about to head into a new election. We have a new Liberal leader, Mark Carney, who looks like he has the momentum right now, thanks to Trump, to win the next election. If that's the case, then there should be some positive movement on climate change. However, it needs to be pointed out that if Carney loses, Poilievre is very much a doubter, a skeptic of climate change, and would probably focus much more on fossil fuels. And Carney himself has some personal conflicts of interest in terms of his activities as an economist and activities as an investment banker, and the fact that some of his investments are supposedly tied to fossil fuels.
Yeah, so we're heading a little bit already to the discussion on divestments. That's something that I want to touch a little bit later on more. But for the previous years, how would you describe or summarize how this environment was for the investments?
For Canada, I think that we would probably, if we were giving grades out in terms of climate change policies, we would probably be at a B- or a C+. I'm just starting some research now on the results of the Inflation Reduction Act. That was a major policy that was passed by Biden in 2022. And what it did was make huge investments in clean energy. We haven't done anything like that in Canada. And so while Canada, the previous Trudeau government talked a lot about climate change and did make some actions in that direction, it was nowhere near the scope that is required. You know, one small example of that, obviously, is that Trudeau bought this oil pipeline that is shipping oil from Alberta into Burnaby now. And the fact that, in fact, the federal government, and particularly the provincial government here, have promised to move back from the carbon tax. So we're actually moving backwards. We're not moving forwards on climate change in Canada.
And this is a pretty big moment in history, right? We have for the first time surpassed for over a year the 1.5 mark lens on global climate change above the 1.5 line. And I think that's looking ahead with the Conference of the Parts number 30 happening in Brazil, and all the discussion about the Paris Agreement. There's lots going on that leads us to think how those investments were made and where we're actually heading, right?
It's a very curious aspect of human nature. There was a report going back to the early 2000s called the Stern Report, appointed by the UK government. And he was one of the head economists in the UK at the time. And he warned that if we didn't invest in climate change mitigation and adaptation, that in fact markets would go awry. And we're starting to see markets in big trouble in terms of insurance for flood insurance, in terms of coastal areas, in terms of the devastation by wildfires. And yet we as humans, and because of our political system being so short-term oriented, are unable to match the challenge that is posed to us by climate change.
Okay. Yes, that's true. And I think that speaks a lot to where I'm trying to head with this conversation. Because one of the things that that we're trying to understand here is for regular people, Burnaby, Vancouver residents, how does I'm going to call it momentum again. How, when we're looking about the current investments, all this political scenario, how do these affect the everyday of Vancouver metropolitan region residents?
Well, just think about the fact that a few years ago we had a town in the eastern part of the Fraser Valley, Lytton, that burned to the ground because of climate change. Think about the fact that, you know, we're 97 or 98% dependent upon hydroelectricity, and climate change is likely to change the precipitation patterns. That means our electricity system is vulnerable. Think about the mountain pine beetle that has devastated our forestry sector, and it's because we haven't had the same kinds of winters we had before climate change. So all of these things are directly affecting BC residents, even though they don't feel it on a day-to-day basis. And because they don't feel it on a day-to-day basis, there isn't enough push for political action.
Yes, I think that's true. And I also think that something that speaks to that is that people don't understand actually what are the policies they're supposed to be upholding. I mean, we've seen a growing discussion in how, for example, electrical cars are not actually that beneficial to the environment as they were promised to be. We look at a lot of discussions, which of the industries, when you're talking about clean energy, are the most effective. And I know that you have a lot of background in this. You've recently published your article on the solar panels. We also discussed recently a lot about nuclear energy. There was your recent panel on the hydrogen energy. And so for you, among all everything that you've seen so far in the research group and in your own research, what are the key industries that should be prioritized and that people need to understand more so that they can push for policies in that direction?
So the interesting thing when we go back to the political question for a political scientist is, how do we get the public interested in disasters that might happen 5 to 10 to 15 years from now? And the answer is that it could be a win-win situation. That is, whenever you're at the start of a new revolution, whether it's the automobile industry at the beginning of the 20th century or cell phones in the 1990s, if you're one of the first companies to come in, just think about Microsoft or Google or Apple. If you're one of the first companies to come in, you have a huge advantage. So we're in that window now for clean energy industries. And I've been trying to convince provincial and federal officials that now is the time for Canada to invest in these new industries that are going to come. The Canadians, there has been a lot of discussion about hydrogen, about fuel cells, because we've had a long history of investing in that industry here. But I think that there are reasons to doubt that hydrogen will be a solution in any near-term future. The more immediate things that we need to focus on are in transforming our transportation system, which would be potentially electric vehicles. But what is often ignored is the fact that if we expanded mass transportation, we have a ready solution here. So if we go to an average European city, for example, London or Madrid or Paris, housing costs are not as much a problem because they have very extensive train networks. But in North America, we rely so much on private vehicles, we haven't thought enough about mass transportation solutions. Think about if we had a high-speed train line that went out to Abbotsford or farther out. This would provide ready access for thousands of people to get to cheaper housing and would alleviate a lot of our inflationary pressures. The main industry right now that is fundamental to the future of electrification of the transportation system and also for electric generation is batteries. And that is an area where Canada would have a comparative advantage because of all our minerals, because of our knowledge base in science and technology. But what we don't have in place are the policies to promote a battery industry in this country.
That speaks a lot so to the international conflicts at the moment, right? Because we see this window of opportunity that we could be investing and developing the Canadian industry, but we are also seeing now a big commercial war in between all countries. When we were talking about the U.S. tariffs on aluminium, all the regulatory measures that have been placed by Canada and by India and by Brazil, How would you say that these measures impact the availability and the cost of renewable energy technologies in Canada and for future development?
It could have a big impact. We know, for example, with electric vehicles, that Chinese vehicles, including their leading manufacturer, BYD, are considerably cheaper, supposedly up to $10,000 cheaper than Teslas, and have a longer range. So by putting tariffs on these electric vehicles from China, we are shortchanging consumers and the ability for us to transform our electric vehicles. We also know, for example, that battery technology needs a lot more investments to get off the ground. If we can improve battery technology, or if we can reduce its costs, then Canada has a huge advantage in terms of renewable energy resources. Whether we're talking about geothermal in the Rocky Mountains or in British Columbia, or we're talking about offshore wind in the Georgia Strait right off of BC, or in some cases even solar in the prairies in Ontario. We also have abundant hydroelectric energy in Quebec and Manitoba. And so what it shows, again, is a lack of federal leadership and a lack of provincial leadership. Why would Ontario be investing in much more expensive nuclear waste that will last 10,000 years when Quebec and Manitoba would love to export hydroelectricity to them? And the same for BC and Alberta. Why is Alberta stuck in fossil fuels when BC has abundant renewable energy resources? This shows a huge policy vacuum.
So if we're talking, I was trying to focus on the international sector, but I think that when you go to the provincial, I think that's the current war between countries and the commercial level, then, of course, opens exactly this that we were saying, a window for us to communicate interprovincial and with another provinces to actually renew our policies and look at those investments, right?
Exactly. It's the international conflict that actually expands that window of opportunity for us, so that for the first time in a long time, people are actually talking about made in Canada and how to reduce interprovincial barriers. Now, what where Trump is right is that the Chinese have been dumping and subsidizing their industries for a long time. So they were a marginal player in batteries. They now control over 90% of the battery market. They control the largest part of the wind and solar markets because the government has lined up behind their industries and subsidized them. And we in the West have been caught asleep because we have too many Western companies that were promised that they were going to make lots of money in the Chinese market. So they transferred their technology, let the Chinese steal it. And now we're really behind in terms of competitiveness in these clean energy industries. But it's not too late. It's not too late. If we had an industrial policy that was proactive to promote Canadian technology, we could catch up.
That's perfect. And I think that's just enjoying what you've just mentioned before I move on to a more general question about sustainability and the policies surrounding it. Just because you've mentioned quickly before Canadian investment in a TMX pipeline, if I catch it right, and also you've mentioned the BC's general policy on fossil fuels. Do you see how these trade tensions with the U.S. Affect the TMX, and if the expansion that was made actually make us now more dependent on fossil fuel exports because we depend on the oil coming back from the U.S. after being transformed?
Well, right now, Trump hasn't put any tariffs on oil exports, so that dependency on the U.S. market will continue. However, you're right, it is also offering additional support for TMX because the idea is we're going to diversify our exports of oil, and the same argument was given for subsidizing the LNG industry by the BC government. And these are, in my mind, very foolish kinds of arguments because these are sunset industries that should be closed down and shut down so that we can save the environment for our children and have a livable planet. We know that the costs of climate change are going to be far larger than any kinds of revenues that these oil exports provide us. But instead of transitioning to the future, we want to make short-term profits.
Okay. And just maybe transitioning a little bit to agreement so that then we can wrap up talking about general policies and how to change those. When we're talking about Trump, we also know that he recently withdrew from the Paris Agreement, and he has a policy, as you mentioned, of investing heavily in fracking. It's general US policy, but it's something that he is directly related to. So if we're looking at Canada electing a conservative government and a similar shift in here, do you see any policies that would be at more risk of rolling back right now that we need to focus on?
I'm not sure if I understand the question.
Yes, okay. So we have now Trump being elected and a possible change for a conservative government. So if we're looking at those and all the policies that will be changed, is there something that we need to worry the most alongside fracking that could be coming in the way?
Yeah, well, I think the main danger, whether it's a conservative or liberal government, is that these tariff wars continue. And we know that our auto industry has been making, we're a unified North American auto industry. They say that an auto part, crosses the Canadian-US border an average of 12 times before an automobile is fully assembled. And what Trump is trying to do is basically disassociate the U.S. industry from the Canadian auto industry. And so our ability to enter into the EV market is dependent upon this integration with the U.S. And so if Trump continues with his tariff wars, what's going to happen is devastation for Canadian manufacturing sector. It will be devastation for our steel exports, for our aluminum exports, and for our automobile industry. And so that will have a huge impact on our ability to enter into the EV industry in the future.
And do you think there's a possibility of us withdrawing from the Paris Agreement here as well?
Effectively, it might happen anyway. Right now, our projections are that neither BC nor Canada is on track to meet its commitments. So we may not have said it out loud, but we have effectively withdrawn by our lack of action. Trudeau had a very positive momentum coming out of the Paris Agreement. He tried to create this pan-Canadian framework for climate change, and yet the provinces created such obstacles that reveal the weakness of the federal government. There really is not a willingness within Canada to accept a pan-Canadian framework at this point, and the federal government is unwilling to provide enough subsidies like Biden did for the provinces to start to invest in clean energy. So we have been kind of stuck. Our emissions have kind of plateaued for a long time. And once this LNG industry starts to take off in BC, our whole carbon plan is busted.
Okay. And I think that's it's so hard to think about it. It honestly gives me a little bit of fear of what is the how is the my future and our generation's future shaping like? So I think that what I'm trying to do here, remarking my feelings, is to talk about governments and changes in governments. So, what exactly should we be looking at when it comes to general population on how to directly help or push governments into more action in terms of sustainable energy, clean energy, and all other environmental friendly investments that should be made?
I know it feels helpless as a voter or an ordinary citizen, but in fact there are a number of things that we can do. The most obvious one is to change our own individual behavior. That is, when your car dies, buy an electric vehicle. The second, and also reduce your footprint. Try to reuse metal cans or bottles instead of plastic, for example. Try to switch your heating to a heat pump, which is based on electricity and therefore based on hydro rather than natural gas. There are many things we can do as individuals. Perhaps the most important thing is to vote. Unfortunately, young people in general have much lower voting turnout rates. And that's why they're not paid attention to. We know that younger people have much stronger environmental values, but they don't vote in the same numbers. Imagine the world we'd be living in right now if Harris had won, but not enough young people turned out for Harris to win in the key swing states. And therefore, we're stuck with Trump, going back to a 19th century policy towards climate change. So voting is really important in being politically active. You know, tens of thousands of votes in those swing states in the U.S. would have made all the difference. The same way a few years ago we had a referendum here on proportional representation. Young people didn't turn out to vote. Older people did. They didn't want proportional representation because they tend to be against change. If we had proportional representation, we would have had a viable path for a Green Party here in Canada. And remember, Trudeau promised proportional representation when he was elected, and then he just dropped the whole ball. So young people could push for a change in our voting system. This is why Europe has much more progressive climate policies, because they have a PR system, a voting system, that allows for a Green Party to become a strong voice. And then the third element, of course, besides being active as an individual in terms of your choices and in terms of voting, is to make yourself heard. That is, to make yourself knowledgeable and to join with other people. And I think that's why your broadcast is so important. When people feel alone, they feel helpless. But if they start to join together, things can change. We feel hopeless now, but remember, Trump is only in office for 4 years. Under Biden, we had the most sweeping and most dramatic climate change legislation historically. And so in 2 or 3 years from now, we need to be ready to vote in a new government and to change policies towards ones that we actually believe in.
And now, coming from a more political science analysis, just to wrap up this episode, is there one key recommendation that you would have for policymakers and for governments when we're talking about clean energy and when you're talking about the necessary changes so that we can secure a more stable climate?
I think the most disappointing thing to me is the fact that both the provincial and federal governments are now backing off on the carbon tax. The carbon tax was considered to be one of the most progressive legislative achievements of Canada. It was heralded around the world, and I don't think that voters understood that the money was coming back to them. There was no tax on voters in terms of them losing money out of their pockets. All of that money was coming right back to them. But because the provincial and federal governments didn't make this clear to voters, they have supported conservative candidates against their own interests. And so this is a huge mistake, and one that could be reversed still.
Perfect. I really, really appreciate all of your inputs here, Dr. Hira, and I hope you're having a pleasant week. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, and I'm happy to be with you.
And thank you for so much for everyone who follow up Dr. Hira's interview. It was lovely to hear him speaking everything on our policies, how the tariffs are affecting our future energy policies. And it's real a pleasure to have a professor and such a dedicated researcher to take his time to speak with us. So thank you again, Dr. Hira, for being here. Not today, but with me. And that was it. That wraps up our open mic episode, everyone. I really, really, really appreciate everyone that has followed us so far. Appreciate the territories in which we are at, and also just the chance to be here. And I wish everyone a lovely rest of your week. Enjoy the sunny day outside. And following me up, we have another pre-recorded open mic episode. So thank you. And here we go with Survival of the Fittest to wrap up from RD Eagle.